I want to welcome you to the St. Patrick's Day Health and Human Services Committee. And we're all enjoying soda bread with butter. We got the butter up here. You have to come get it. nobody wants the butter. Which way is the butter going? Okay. Hope we're on TV today. This is good TV. Anyway, I hope everybody's... I just want to repeat the schedule for next week. We're not meeting tonight. There is a chance of that if we had more bills added. We've actually pushed off the Lutheran Social Services case management bill into next week sometime. And there might be some changes in the hours. We might need to get in some more time either for this and committee work we have to get done. That's actually normal committee work. There might be an extra committee time called. We'll try to keep you apprised about that. Christine is out, so Holly is filling in here. We should talk about that when you get done with this. So just watch for that. There's a couple of bills we have to hear next week. We want to allow ample time for the for public testimony in times when the sun might be up. And so that would be related to that. But the schedule as it is now is Tuesday at 12:30 we'll be convening either as a finance committee or as a joint committee, so you all have to come. And we'll either be taking up a couple bills if we're the finance committee, and then we'll be convening later to take up the omnibus presentation. And then Wednesday at the usual time, we're going to plan to meet then as a regular committee. I'm just trying to decide if we should find some morning time to allow for that too. So it's just nice to come here in the daytime, you know. So for people that want to comment. Thursday we'll be convening at 12:30 until our usual time. If there's interest and work to be done and people have amendments we need to talk about, we'll come back after session and stay here until we're done. And then the bill will go off. Any questions about that? Or Representative Hosh?
Mr. Chair, on the release of the bill, it's 12:30 on Monday?
Electronically at 12:30.
And Mr. Chair, I'm assuming since it will be open for public consumption at that time that a spreadsheet will be accompanying it?
I'm getting head nods, so yeah. Representative Huntley can tell you how the pure logistics of this thing. I've never actually had to sit through this before on this end of it. And whoever thinks it's that easy, it's way hard. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, most of us are going to go home this weekend and do what we usually do on weekends at home. And unfortunately, our staff will probably be here all weekend putting in 20-hour days to get this ready.
Yeah.
And so we ought to recognize them for the amount of work that they have done and the amount of work they're going to do while we're home with our families.
Yeah, so thanks to them for, yeah. And then when they get to go home, the revisor gets to stay, which is a whole other piece. And that's, you don't even think about that kind of nuance until you have to time it all. I predict that, yeah, so the spreadsheet and that should be available then. And we'll have hard copies available as soon as they can be printed, but they were not wanting to overpromise, so they're saying noon on Tuesday there'll be hard copies for people who don't have access to a computer. Just watch your calendar for maybe something on Wednesday morning. We're debating about this business about moving some bills on Tuesday as well. So we're just trying to fit it all in. So with that, I'll turn the gavel over to Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we wish you well in finding that pot of gold. Appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. And so we'll proceed with the business that we have today. And do we have a quorum? Okay, we do have a quorum, and if we could do the minutes. Somebody would like to move the minutes.
So moved, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton moves the minutes.
Representative Hamilton moves the minutes. All right. Which, the 15th? Okay. We have the April 15th minutes, and Representative Hamilton is moving the April 15th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? March 15th, correct. And then there's also the minutes for March 16th. You did so well in the first one, so Representative Hamilton, could you maybe do that again? All right. Thank you. Madam, yes, Representative Lee.
Just a minor issue, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. on the 16th. I'm noticing that members who are members of both committees were listed twice for the joint meeting, but I appear to have been here only for the Finance Committee and not for the Reform Committee. So just wanted to make it clear I was here for both committees.
Thank you, Representative Liebing. So duly noted and will be corrected in the final minutes. With that, we'll have a motion on the floor right now to approve the minutes from Wednesday, March 16th. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. And thank you for catching that. And it's important for each one of us when we take a look at these minutes to look for those things. Staff do an excellent job, but on occasion they're just an overlook. So it's good to get it. We want to make sure you get credit for the time you spend here. All right. With that, we're ready to proceed to our first bill. Representative Banyan, House File 367. And Representative Banyan, if you would go ahead and present your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm happy to present House File 367 to you today regarding certification of people who test our wastewater. I have, and you should have received in your packets, an author's amendment numbered A11-0155. And since I'm not a member of this committee, I would ask someone to please move the author's amendment.
I'll be glad to move the author's amendment for A110155 on behalf of the author.
Thank you.
And we do have the amendment then in front of us. Do you wish to speak to the amendment, or shall we attach it to your bill and then proceed to present?
Madam Chair, it may be helpful in terms of evaluating all of the bill to hear its the genesis of this author's amendment. And so if you would not mind, I would like to discuss it. In fact, I'd like to invite someone to come talk about it with me. We presented this bill, and some of you who are in HHS reform heard this a few weeks ago. When we visited with you at that time, this bill discusses how municipal labs are certified to be able to test our wastewater discharge into our rivers and other bodies of water, and at that time, and how they're treated. And at that time, Department of Health came and was not in support, or they were at least neutral and wanted to talk about this bill. Since then, we've spoken with several cities. Other wastewater treatment operators who need to test their equipment to make sure they're doing it properly. Department of Health and PCA were on those phone calls. We had several discussions. At the end of those discussions, Department of Health offered to us to write something that would help clarify the law that was passed in 2010 that created the issue that we have. The issue is, in essence, that during the 2010 session, our legislature passed into law a requirement for a higher standard to be used, a standard called NELAP, for testing our wastewater, and it was actually a certification process that requires a great deal of additional testing of the labs, certification, and had lots of different standards. It created a good deal of, I think it's not too pejorative to say consternation among some of our municipal labs. And in reaction to that, they came to us and said, "Can you do something about this?" And what we've done through House File 367 is encourage a conversation between them and the Department of Health. Deputy Commissioner Stein, who's now at PCA but was at Department of Health when the conversation started, was instrumental in that conversation, worked with us, and helped draft this piece here. And to give you a little more about that, I wonder if with your permission, Madam Chair, if he would be able to speak now.
Yes, please proceed, Representative Banyan, and if you would Welcome to the committee, and if you would just state your name for the record and any organization or title you may wish to share.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Linkstein. I'm a Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. On Tuesday, I was Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health, so I've just yesterday started a new job and fortunately have managed to find my office both days. So I am here to offer a little bit further comment on Representative Banyan's remarks regarding this language. When the initial language for House File 367 was introduced, we expressed some concerns about the elimination of any standards for wastewater laboratory evaluation. And so what this language attempts to do is to modify the current statutory language to establish essentially a second tier of laboratory accreditation standards for the laboratories that are doing tests to comply with wastewater discharge permits. There are somewhere around 60 municipal laboratories in the state that conduct tests of that spectrum. That's not all the laboratories that operate in the state. That's just the municipal laboratories that are doing their tests to comply, to assure their compliance with the wastewater permits. So what this language now does is essentially modify the accreditation program requirements. There are two categories of exemptions that have been added for laboratories that test for microbiology and chemistry in their permits. And the first exemption is to the personnel requirements of the NELAC program standards. There was request by a number of the municipal laboratory personnel and representatives around the state that was a creating a burden in their local government budget conversations because they were not clear whether they had to have a supervisor or a personnel member on call at all times and whether that could drive up local government budgetary issues. And so we've clarified that is not a requirement, that there are other ways of satisfying that requirement than having a supervisor on call at all times. The second area is on the proficiency testing, and proficiency testing is assuring that your equipment is arriving at an accurate result. So when you do a proficiency test, you're running the samples that you normally run all the time to evaluate the quality of the water. Then you have a known sample that you've purchased, and there's a result that is expected from that analysis, and if you get the expected result, then your equipment and your personnel are operating correctly. If you fail that test, then something failed in the process or in the equipment. And so we modified the requirements because of the cost and complexity of doing two proficiency tests a year. This now allows laboratories that are testing for wastewater fields of required analytes to do one test a year. If there is a failure on that one PT, then there's a secondary follow-up requirement for assurance of quality control in the laboratory. What this will also do is eliminate the requirement from the practice of ours of having an administrative penalty for those laboratories. There's the agency, the Consolidated Health Enforcement Act, spells out how the health department would implement its enforcement criteria. And so we're actually going to, rather than requiring them to pay an administrative penalty order should they fail the proficiency test, we're going to have them simply continue to refine and review their methods and their equipment so that they achieve a satisfactory result. The cost of another kit to do the proficiency test is about $60 or $75 as compared to the penalty that they would pay on top of doing another proficiency test. So those are the two areas of requirements that have been modified in the language that Representative Banyan has offered today. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Appreciate that. And members, questions for Mr. Stein? Representative McElpatrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question for you. One of my small towns in my district is having their water tested as they are supposed to. And can you give me an idea of what the average monthly cost is for that?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know what their costs for operations are. There may be some folks here from the municipal side that could answer that more effectively. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer.
Okay, I wasn't sure it was a fair question anyway, but yep. I'd like to know.
Representative McElpatrick, Mr. Stein, I appreciate that. Did you get your question answered, or do we need to have somebody else address the question?
Madam Chair, if there is someone that has an answer for me, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Sometimes there are folks here interested.
Oh, they may. Yes.
Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McElpatrick. I think we have some people who are going to come testify today, who run a commercial lab with us from Minnesota Valley, they might have. I'm looking at them. I'm looking to see if they have. They think they have a kind of an answer for you, and since they want to testify at some point about the bill generally, maybe if you wouldn't mind incorporating that as we talk about the whole bill, if we could delay that question just for a moment. I think if anyone has any questions about the addition of the A11, I would suggest fine. Otherwise, I'd suggest perhaps you could vote the amendment, and then we could talk about the bill generally as amended.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Bannion. As the author, we certainly do respect getting the bill in the shape you would like it to be in, and so we now have the A11 amendment. Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, we'll proceed to vote. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Representative Bannion, you can proceed on the presentation of your bill as amended.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for accepting our amendment. There's actually not much more to tell other than Deputy Commissioner Stein is giving you. We have produced, along with this, a list of issues that were collected by us through some help from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities that provided MDH with information about where cities, municipal labs, were having issues complying with the new standards. Some of these are now in this legislation. Others of them are being handled by additional documentation, a crosswalk, which has been produced by MDH to help labs understand how to comply with this newer standard. And so that piece is in front of you. That piece is here with you as well. And at this point, what I'm hoping to do is we're presenting the bill to you. We would ask you to consider laying it on the table for yourself for possible inclusion in your omnibus. There's a letter for you from the testimony in front of the Health and Human Services Reform Committee back on February 28th by Scott Gilbertson. I believe Ms. Iverson that's in their packet. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that's there, I'd invite the other people wishing to testify to come up now, please.
Thank you, Representative Bannion. And your testifiers, my understanding, you have one representative from your three at this time that will make remarks, and then the others will be also available for supportive questioning and answers. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name and title for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Jerry Balbach, and I'm the president of Minnesota Valley Testing Labs. We're actually changing things up today due to the fact that we just got a copy of the bill. We are going to respectfully withdraw our testimony. Many of our concerns seem to have been addressed in the amendment, and we haven't had a thorough review of it yet, and I would prefer not to say anything that I may live to regret later. So, but we can try to address the question on the water testing. If you could please repeat the question.
Representative McElpatrick.
Thank you. I just wondered the average cost for a small town for their water testing monthly.
Mr. Balbach.
Question's a little bit tough to answer without knowing specifics. If they're only looking at coliform bacteria, whether it's one sample a month, two samples a month, average coliform bacteria, you're probably looking at less than $15 a month to test for one of those.
Representative McElpatrick, that answers your question or sufficiently. Thank you very much, Mr. Balbach. We really appreciate that. And so at this time, you will defer your remarks to any other time. Representative Banyan, do you have any other comments that we have?
I do not. I think at this point, okay. I hope the committee can see that we have pretty broad agreement from the people that brought us the bill in the first place to bring before you, from the administration and from the commercial labs who could have been treated differentially, but in fact are not under the now amended bill. And so we would just stand for any additional questions at this time.
Thank you, Representative Banyan. We do have a Mr. John Grumper who has requested to testify. So, Mr. Grumper, if you would please come forward and welcome to the committee, and please state your name and title or organization.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The name actually is Gumper without the R after the G. I try not to be grumpy.
Not at all.
And I am the vice president of a small consulting company called Chemval Consulting, which is based in the state of Utah, which may make it odd that I'm here on the surface. But let me explain. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee, for having me, Representative Banyan. Since you know nothing about me, let me explain just a little bit as to why I'm here. I've spent the last 26 years as an environmental chemist. I've worked as a bench chemist. I've worked as a manager in laboratories. I've worked as a QA officer. For the last 15 years, I've spent my time consulting to laboratories and quality assurance issues. I've provided training to laboratory directors, quality assurance directors, laboratory assessors, and others. I consult with many small laboratories that are subject to the NELAC standards in multiple states, including my home state of Utah and including Minnesota. In Utah, these standards have been in place for over a decade. I'm actively involved in writing and publishing environmental methods as a part of the Standard Methods Committee, and I'm actively involved with the NELAC process. I'm not a lobbyist, and while I do have two small laboratory clients in the state of Minnesota, I'm here at my own expense today. I've listened to the audio of previous hearings on this bill and found a great deal of misinformation and incorrect information that has been provided to the committees hearing these bills. And while I don't have time to provide an all-inclusive list of those errors, I did want to provide some examples. First of all, it's been stated that the NELAC Institute, which is responsible for the current standards, is a special interest group of large commercial laboratories. In truth, TNI is a federally accredited as a consensus standards development body, which requires that the organization not be a special interest group. The organization is required to consider input from all stakeholders in the environmental community when developing these standards, including any interested parties in this room. Anyone who's here and has an interest in these standards could provide input, and the organization is required to hear that input. It's been stated that laboratory analyses take longer to perform under this standard. This would only be true, I need to point out, if in fact the laboratory were not previously performing the analyses correctly. There have been no changes between your 2006 standard and your 2009 standard that should impact how long an analysis takes. It's been stated that the standards that are at issue here are well over 250 pages, and it has not been stated that actually they're 224 pages, and that most of the standard that's in there does not apply to the laboratories, but applies to the greater process, to proficiency testing providers, to accreditation bodies, and others. It's been stated that under standards, laboratories would have to hire personnel with four-year degrees. Without the exemption that Representative Banyan proposed, my apologies.
Promoted, I see there, Representative Banyan.
I apologize, Representative Banyan. But without the exemption that has been proposed in the amended bill, that requirement is still not accurately portrayed. It's also been stated that standard implementation requires great increases in costs, particularly costs in personnel and paperwork. Yes, there are some costs associated with the implementation of the standards, but the incremental cost from the previous standard implemented in 2006 should be much smaller than what I heard described in previous testimony. And in fact, it certainly is much smaller in the laboratories that I see. So anyway, I also have not had a chance to review the amended bill. I scanned through it very quickly, and I got an idea of what it is, but even with the revisions that are posted in here, I still have some real great concerns. I believe that if it's passed, it will set up an environment where it'll have negative effects on the business climate in this state and also open the door to potential environmental damage, and that's why I'm here today. by lowering the standards for accreditation for municipal laboratories and then allowing them to perform work for each other, as the bill states, you'll create a business climate in which municipal laboratories, which are subsidized by taxpayer dollars, will be in direct competition with private businesses on what is now an unlevel playing field. I believe there'll be a significant negative financial impact to the small commercial laboratories in the greater Minnesota area, including the family-owned business I was working with earlier this week. I would expect that several of these commercial laboratory businesses would have to close their doors. I mentioned costs earlier, and that there are some incremental costs to these standards, but to put it simply, the costs that come are due to requirements that ensure that the instructions for performing the work in the laboratory are written, that they are accurate, and that they are followed. And in my opinion, that's not too much to ask for organizations that are so closely tied to public health. There's a tendency to dismiss the need for standards in municipal wastewater laboratories by saying, well, it's only wastewater. But this mindset ignores the fact that the wastewater of one community is the drinking water of the next community downstream. This is a very important fact of water management. In my opinion, it's not too much to ask that these organizations have higher standards.
Mr. Gumper,
yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't know how long your remarks are. But
20 more seconds, if I may.
All right,
Madam
please.
Chairman. Thank
Good.
You.
Thank you.
So just as a comparison, you may recall a couple of years ago there was a great scandal when toys being imported from other countries turned up having very high levels of lead and other heavy metals. Consumer Product Safety Commission put into effect standards for laboratories testing toys that are extraordinarily similar to the NELAC standards that are at issue here. They did that in order to protect children from possibly ingesting pieces of the toys. The difference here is that in Minnesota, the residents will fish in, bathe in, and ingest the water that's being tested by these standards. And so I urge you to vote against this bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Mr. Gumper. Any questions from the committee for Mr. Gumper? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm not sure, as Mr. Gumper just said, he had not looked at this bill, at the amended bill, too well. I'm sure most of that's because we were only able to get it in proper form here over the last 36 hours. But I think as he reviews the bill and as you review the bill, you will see that it actually is not a lowering of standards. It is a alternative way of certifying labs. It is a means by which we are providing them with more information, clearer instructions about and means by which they can fulfill the standards of the 2009 law. And I actually, with due respect, would disagree with the characterization that this bill is somehow a lowering of any standards.
Okay,
I would also argue if I said anything just now that Mr. Stein disagrees with, please, you're welcome to come back. But if he's not going to come to the chair, I'm going to hope that means he agrees.
All right, then, Representative Banyan. Members, any other questions? We don't have any names here on the list. So I would renew my motion that House File 367 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Banyan. All right. Next item on the agenda is Representative Gutwalt's bill, House File 200. We'll give you a moment there to get your... to your chair there, and Representative Gutwalt, you have any
and,
testifiers today?
Madam Chair, I do, and as they're making their way up, I'll just mention there is a reason I'm not wearing green today, members. I'm Bavarian by descent, so I'm wearing Bavarian blue today. But for the people of Irish descent on the committee, I am carrying a green pen today, so I have some green with me. Members, the color that I'm really representing right now is purple for Alzheimer's, and it is time for Minnesota to get ready. Frankly, members, I'm a little embarrassed to bring a bill that does so little, but in our difficult economic times and our budget situation, this is really something that is a reasonable start. You will hear testimony from people today that share some legitimate concerns about privacy, collection of data, and that sort of thing. And, Madam Chair, I will move House File 200 laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus Health and Human Services Finance Bill. And I have an A2 amendment that I'm offering as well. And I bring this up now, members. I'll move that A2 amendment. And, Madam Chair, if I may, I'll just walk through it briefly. We have met with the Minnesota Medical Association and providers about their concerns around collection of data. We've taken into consideration concerns about privacy of data as we've brought forward this really kind of meager but reasonable first step in the process of getting ready for the wave of Alzheimer's patients we're facing as a state. And I'll walk through the language a bit. It replaces the first section in the bill with one that really deals with existing data. And it says the commissioner shall review currently available quality measures and make recommendations for future measurement aimed at improving assessment and care related to Alzheimer's disease and other dementia diagnoses, including improved rates and results of cognitive screening, rates of Alzheimer's and other dementia diagnoses, and prescribed care and treatment plans. Members, the goal of this bill is to start pulling together the data necessary for us to improve both the quality, the consistency, the cost-effectiveness of dementia and Alzheimer's treatment in the state of Minnesota for the sake of the nearly 100,000 people who live with this disease now and who by the year 2050, if we don't do anything, that number will have doubled to over 200,000. The cost, if we do nothing by the year 2050, will reach $20 billion for the state of Minnesota alone. Nationally, that number could be over $1 trillion. So this is a major, major thing approaching us. I've used the word tsunami before. I think that has a little bit of a different meaning as of today with the current situation overseas. So I'm just going to say it is a big impact to the state of Minnesota. And we are behind the eight ball in getting ready for it. So this bill really kind of gets us started. I want to mention that in response to its legislative mandate, the Alzheimer's Disease Working Group, which we as a legislature put in place last year to reduce the human and fiscal tolls of Alzheimer's disease, developed a set of priority recommendations. Those recommendations are framed by the overarching vision that Minnesota must be prepared for the budgetary, social, and personal impacts of Alzheimer's disease through a comprehensive, person-centered approach to the disease that is reinforced through transformation of the systems that touch the lives of persons with Alzheimer's and their caregivers. Some of those recommendations include identifying Alzheimer's early, using healthcare home models for Alzheimer's care, achieving quality and competence in dementia care across the state, preparing our communities and the public for dealing with this overwhelming number of dementia and Alzheimer's cases that we're going to be experiencing over the next couple of decades. Training medical providers. Right now, the University of Minnesota University of Minnesota, as its training physicians, offers two hours of training in Alzheimer's and dementia. And yet, if you look at the number of people over the age of 85 who are going to experience this disease in the near future and the number in our population moving into that age group, it's extraordinary. We need to do more to prepare our providers for dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's. Pursuing cost savings. We think there are ways to deliver better, higher quality care for less money. This is a finance committee. We're looking for ways to reduce the cost of health care. We think that can be done to deliver better outcomes for Alzheimer's and dementia patients in the state. And then intensifying research and surveillance so we can do the very best job we can of addressing the disease in Minnesota. Madam Chair, I'd like to bring up at least the first of our testifiers. I don't know who wants to testify first. Dr. Geist?
Representative Gutwalt, we'll take your testifier. I just wanted to clarify. I believe you moved your amendment, but I don't know that we acted on it. And so I think we would like to do that and make sure we get that done.
Let's do that.
Okay. You can stay there, sir, please. The pages will distribute it for you. Yes. Thank you very much, sir. We have the HO 200A2 amendment. Representative Gutwald has moved this amendment to his bill, House File 200. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. An amendment is adopted. Please proceed, Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Geist, if you want to state your name for the record.
Yes, I'm Dr. Robert Geist. I was a physician in St. Paul, practicing from 1960 till late 1990s. I'm subsequently retired. I'm getting older. I'm not 85 yet, so I don't quite qualify for this. I am also was a urologist, not a neurologist, so my apologies for addressing a neurological problem. I found out about this bill 2 days ago and read over the Senate file, so my remarks are reference to the Senate file 347, and I just got the file 200 today, House file 200 today. I have a personal interest in this disease because I have a sister who has dementia, I think from long-term being a smoking chimney. But I also have a 91-year-old sister who's still bright as can be. So that's the way we all want everybody to be. And maybe early diagnosis of the disease will, and keeping people involved in life will do that for us. What I'd like to suggest in this current bill is that I think it's good and can be fixed a bit better. The problem is with the bill, it still kind of comes down to, the original bill came down to report cards. And I've attached something on there about the problems with report cards, which I will not refer to today. You can read it at your leisure. It is not a narrative summary, just a bullet, so it's not referenced. Secondly, the bill requires, in Subdivision 2, healthcare home collaborative curriculum that includes screening, education on best practices regarding identification and management of Alzheimer's and other dementia patients. Well, this is not exactly a academic basic and clinical research methodology, which is what I will refer to in a few moments and which I would recommend instead. excuse me. The Subdivision 4 also poses a future threat possibly of the report cards, which I would find very difficult for the clinical practices and for the state because they are very expensive and they are nearly worthless fundamentally in my opinion. So what I would recommend is that the committee consider funding or block grant for an academic study by an appropriate University of Minnesota Medical School faculty department, the medical school faculty departments, and that this would then read includes basic research screening and education on best practices regarding identification management of Alzheimer's and so forth. Then I would also consider, instead of going to clinicians and hoping that you can get something out of the clinical records with yearly reports, as they say, report cards, if you will, I think it can be done better by amassing epidemiologic data like we do for cancer, for spina bifida, for a lot of other specific diseases and epidemic diseases and so forth. And last of all, Subdivision 4, the potential threat for report cards, in my opinion, could be changed to something such as progress toward establishment and collection of epidemiologic data regarding the incidence community resources available for management in order to consider means to improve management at a local level. Now, what this would do, this would allow you to look at such programs as cash and counseling, which have been very successful for people who are otherwise homebound and who might otherwise end up in a nursing home instead. One of my colleagues sent Representative Gottwald a message, a letter this morning, outlining other things that are of importance here, and this data gathering is going to be helpful for that. Now, as you need public education, we have a public health educational program with Alzheimer's disease. How about palliative care before people are in crisis? More driver safety awareness. We have to involve licensing of people. I'm happily not 85 yet, as I say, but I am greater than 80, so it will be interesting what I have to do every 2 years. I'm okay with that. So there are other things that can be done once the data is gathered. I think it can be done in an epidemiologic method, and I think this bill should certainly go forward. I think it's a very good idea. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Geist, and from taking a look at your materials here, you've given a great deal of thought and effort and laid things out in a very readable fashion, and we really appreciate your care and consideration, not only for your wife as well, but for others, so we really appreciate
your time. My wife's still okay.
She's okay. All right, good. Thank you very much for coming. We do have another testifier here today on this bill. And I believe another one after that, actually. So, welcome to the committee. Please give us your name and your organization or title, if you like.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, I'm Mary Burchard. I'm the Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Association, Minnesota, North Dakota. And I'd like to respond to Dr. Geis's comments in that we share many of the things that he talked about today. The work of the Alzheimer's Disease Working Group did study a lot of those issues, and in the recommendations are a lot of first steps to begin work addressing some of those. And we would like to invite the doctor to join us. And the bill before you is really an immediate and essential first step that paves the way to gives us more information. We don't have a lot of information today about how people are screened, diagnosed, and given treatment plans in the physician's offices. The bill allows us to look at what might be the best design for that. It does not go as far as a scorecard at this time, doesn't create one, doesn't implement one. It's just a matter of looking at the design of the evaluation and measurement tools that might be best. In the coming year, as a result of passing the bill, it would be our hope that we would work with the Minnesota Medical Association, the Health Department, Minnesota Community Measurement, to really look at what are the issues around physician visits and the opportunities that we can garner, I suppose, and that would be the right word, to move Alzheimer's forward in the state of Minnesota to raise awareness and to begin treating it in the best and most cost-effective way possible.
Thank you, Ms. Borchardt. We really appreciate your testimony, and especially at the invitation of Dr. Geist, it looked like he would be a wonderful addition to your organization. And if this can be a living Facebook, I would say you are inviting him to be a friend of the organization. And so I'm glad you're here today to be able to work together. Thank you for coming. We also have another testifier, Twyla Braze, I believe, has requested to testify on this bill. So please welcome to the committee, Ms. Braze, and if you would just, again, state your name for the record and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze. I'm president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and as Representative Gottwalt knows, we oppose this bill for its policy to expand health surveillance and a data collection system we have been in opposition to since it emerged from the governor's office in final negotiations in 2008, and also because of the cost of the statewide health surveillance system. On line 1.16 of the first engrossment, the bill references 62U.02. Now, I believe that is still in the amendment?
Still in the bill.
Yep. Yes. Still in the bill.
Yes, it is.
Yes. This is the payment reform law which passed in 2008 and requires doctors to send the department data on the treatments and outcomes of their patients as defined by the department. Doctors must submit data to the government which will be used to provide bonuses or financial penalties to providers. This data is being collected through millions of dollars sent by Minnesota to a data warehouse in the state of Maine and the Minnesota Community Measurement Project, which assesses private claims data that is sent to the warehouse without patient consent. And this, for those of you who do not know about the law, our organization did this one little card here that gives you the facts about the law on one side. Okay, and then the other thing to note about this is in November, the Health Department released quality reports on healthcare providers. Those quality reports, when all stacked together, we printed them all out, are about a foot high. And on doctors, they say things like whether the patient, they're measuring the doctor for whether the patient had a good cholesterol level, a good blood pressure, took two aspirin or one aspirin a day, at their blood sugar level, and whether they smoke or not. And this is how the doctor is being evaluated on really what the patient is doing or not doing, or how the patient is able to maintain their own health. Now, the 2008 contracts are as followed, and you have the list. But it's not a complete list. I discovered after we printed it for you that there are additional things on that list, with the total in these contracts being $4,980,189. And as far as I know, there's a new contract because the one with the database in the state of Maine expired on March 1st. So there must be a new contract with millions of dollars more to continue taking our data without our consent. So these contracts are expiring this year or next year, and of course they may be renewed if this database stays in place. This bill of Representative Gottwald seeks to expand the use of this controversial government health surveillance system. We do not support its expansion or the taxpayer funds that have already been poured into it or the funds that this bill would add to it or this legislature this year might be considering adding to it. The health department is not a research institution for Alzheimer's. It's a government agency that is currently collecting data with an eye toward cost containment and the creation of one-size-fits-all government-issued treatment protocols, or government-approved treatment protocols, which we believe will lead to rationing. The department's Alzheimer report says the cognitive health of all Medicare patients should be assessed at an annual wellness visit now offered under Obamacare, which is cutting $1.5 trillion from Medicare, a sign that rationing is being planned. Somewhat on an aside, just to say that people have said about Alzheimer's that some people might not want their cognition assessed. And secondly, that the American Medical News reports that screening for dementia is controversial, with a high risk of false positives as well as stigma for positive test results. So let me conclude by saying that we understand that Alzheimer's disease is a difficult and disabling condition, but that is not a reason for the state of Minnesota to expand surveillance on the population. If patients with Alzheimer's disease or their families want to become part of a research study, we feel they should make themselves available to those who are looking for cures, not be forced to have their data and doctors analyzed by those who have the power to use their data to tie their doctors' hands and ration their care. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Braze. Representative Gottwald.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to respond just briefly. I would point out again that with the amendment, the A2 amendment, this now says the commissioner shall review currently available quality measures and make recommendations for future measurement aimed at improving assessment and care related to Alzheimer's disease. Just because it is part of 62U.15, it is in addition to that section because that's the appropriate place in the statute where it belongs. It doesn't make it akin to all the other things that Ms. Brace has highlighted. The intent of this is clear. I mean, if we want to do away with the other parts of 62U and the mechanisms created under it, I think that's probably a bigger issue. It's certainly one that's been debated here before and will continue to be debated. We are certainly very sensitive to data privacy issues, but the intent here is to look at the existing data about how Alzheimer's disease is being currently treated in the state of Minnesota in aggregate. You know, we're not identifying individuals here and singling them out. We're not asking for new data under this bill. We're asking for a look at existing data. And I think it's a very reasonable first step in trying to deal with this.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. I'm also going to check, were there any other questions from members of the committee? Okay, Ms. Braze, you had another comment.
Yes, just Madam Chair and Representative Gottwald. I understand that you were trying to make the bill better, but the fact of the matter is everything that gets added to that section just embeds it further into our law, and the data is being collected regularly, continuously, and so current data is just going to be an expanded amount of data, and another purpose for the database only makes it more difficult for us to eventually eliminate it.
Thank you, Ms. Braze. Thank you for your testimony today. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to request a roll call on this bill.
Roll call being, Representative Liebling, this bill is being laid over for possible inclusion. All right. Okay, Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, first of all, if there are any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them. And if there aren't, I'll renew my motion that House File 200 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
There's no vote.
No vote, Madam just Chair. Laid over. Sorry, laid over. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, Representative Kiffmeyer, are you prepared to move your bill?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. I move that House File 1143 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Very good. Would you like to proceed?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. And I do have testifiers here today. I would like to clarify that on your agenda, it does state, it makes a statement. We did put up a and a delete everything amendment was placed on the website, but to let you know that today I am not going to be asking for any action, any amending at this time to House File 1143, that this the debate and or the testifiers today will be to the original bill 1143. Okay. Thank you very much. And Mr. Chairman and members, I first of all want to say thank you to the taxpayers who have contributed greatly to the health care of Minnesotans who are unable to afford their own. So we really just want to say thank you for that, and we appreciate what you have done, because we here in government don't really have money except that which comes from our residents who wonderfully share of their resources with the state of Minnesota and for the others who have benefits there. This particular bill here today is working on reforming the delivery and payment delivery of Minnesotans that are in particular on Medicaid and or Minnesota Care. So the goal here is to have payment reform with direct contracting. The providers are the best coordinators of care. They are the ones that know medicine. We as legislators do what we do here, but our providers are the ones, the doctors and the hospitals and the nurses and all of those folks, a wonderful group of people who care a great deal and have put their lives into this kind of work. But they provide the best coordination of care. So what we really want to do here is to help put doctors and our providers back in charge and being able to have a program by which we pay and untie them and not do so much micromanaging. We want to focus on performance, on outcomes, and give transparency to how this is conducted so we can know that we're getting what we have paid for and is it done well. I really appreciated all the testimony from the CCDS folks that recognized that a lot of good was done and there were issues, problems with that. But we didn't want to lose sight of the fact that the patient was put at the center and applying a great flexibility in how they cared for that patient and being focused on that exact thing, performance outcomes and having transparency. Really appreciate that. The approach that we have taken here can be summed up in the fact that there would be enrolled provider networks, that we would have clients upon being accepted into the programs that would make a choice of their enrolled provider networks, and there's other varieties of legislation here as well that gives a few more details to that. I know there are many of you who are knowledgeable. But that we would also have a basic care services, which are listed in the bill for you on page 2. So those basic health care services would have a total cost of care and a coordination of care that would be wrapped together. We would also ask them for transparency and information as far as outcomes. And we also give them flexibility to provide on the top of page 3 that they can provide qualified enrollees with services that are in addition to those listed in the above paragraph. And so that basic care of services is really a fundamental issue. But what we also found with the CCDS programming is that there was the issue of catastrophic. And many times that the concerns about being part of the CCDS was being based upon what do you do with the things that you cannot manage, the accidents, the things that happen to you, or the really big, very large, very expensive kind of health care needs. So one of the things that we focused on the basic care services, but then we also wanted to make sure, and you will see that under on page 4, subdivision 6, major medical coverage. And the focus here was to allow the ability that when either the dollar amount or the incident itself is sufficiently large, that would help to mitigate the risk of the basic care service provider. So we have that basic care, the major medical coverage, and then also on the page 5, that the premiums, we would take the Minnesota care enrollees receiving benefits, would continue to pay those premiums as provided in Section 256L15, and medical assistance enrollees receiving benefits under this section would also, using that same sliding scale. But if you note earlier in the bill, there is not a copay, that when they have the total cost of care, they do not have additional copays. There are also some, on the last section, some services provided through fee-for-service. And as we were working together to come up with this language and this kind of reform, we tried to keep it as simple as we could and focused on the basic concepts. Do want to let you know that we are also working with the health plans, both the county-based purchasing, the other private sector health plans, and also with the Minnesota Hospital Association. The genesis of the language here is through the Minnesota Hospital Association, that they have just formed a loose group. It just was brainstorming and discussions with pieces of paper that says, here's some ideas, taking some of the good things and trying to give our providers a little more flexibility and staying more focused on the outcomes. And so with that, Mr. Chair, at this time, I have a testifier from the Minnesota Hospital Association who would like to testify also in support of 1143 and may have additional comments at this time.
Very good, Representative Kiffmeyer. Would your testifier like to come down to the dais, the table? And please identify yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lawrence Massa, and I'm the CEO and president of the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing our state's 145 hospitals and 17 health systems. And I believe my testimony has been distributed to the committee members as well. The Minnesota Hospital Association supports the need for meaningful reforms to our healthcare payment and delivery system. We agree with those who say that the current system is unsustainable and does not fully deliver the value patients desire and payers demand. To that end, our board adopted a strategic plan and reform principles in late 2009 that is focused on helping our members develop and assess and respond to proposals that will bring about effective reforms that reduce the cost curve, support more affordable coverage for all Minnesotans, and allow our members to continually improve quality and patient safety. Again, this testimony has been distributed, and it includes a copy of our principles that we adopted back in 2009. Our initial take is that House File 1143 appears to be consistent with many of our reform principles. We applaud Representative Kiffmeyer for proposing an alternative pathway that would allow providers to create savings for the state rather than simply relying on cuts to the flawed fee-for-service system as the only tool to balance the budget. This bill appears to provide some flexibility for the diverse provider community throughout our state. This is important because our membership is as diverse as Minnesota's geography and its people. A one-size-fits-all approach is likely not workable and could create significant barriers in access to appropriate care in some parts of the state. While yet not fully defined, the bill also includes a mechanism for providers to better manage additional risk by having a major medical stop-loss policy in addition to the global payment system for other healthcare services. Both of these provisions are crucial in the development of new payment models. Of course, there are many details regarding the proposal that need to be further developed, analyzed, and discussed, but we believe House File 1143 is a step in the right direction. We pledge our commitment as representatives of the hospital community to work with the authors, the administration, and other stakeholders in the pursuit of meaningful health care payment and delivery reforms that would meet the needs of our patients. We are proud of the health care infrastructure that has been developed in Minnesota and the role we play in delivering great access to high-quality, safe care throughout our state. Let's be careful that we not let unintended consequences damage access or quality as we seek to reform the payment and delivery system in these challenging times. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Massa. Committee members, any questions for the testifier? Representative Gottwald.
You're looking very good in green today, Mr. Chair, by the way. I just wanted to mention that.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Massa, I've been looking at this proposal coming forward, and it looks like kind of a hospital-based version of an HMO, kind of. And I'm wondering, you know, one of the reasons the ACOs or CSCs didn't work well in other parts of Minnesota outside the Twin Cities area for the GMAC population, GAMC. There, I went and did it myself. GAMC population was that outstate hospitals did not want to bear risk, and I've kind of understood that for a while, that hospitals don't want to bear risk in trying to create kind of a system of both coverage and care delivery. So, is this a change in position? Are you ready to bear risk? How is risk bearing envisioned underneath this model?
Mr. Massa.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the two provisions of the bill that I mentioned, the flexibility for those providers in greater Minnesota that are in small communities to opt for a fee-for-service payment system if they're not ready for this type of reform is a positive from our point of view. Also, the major medical stop-loss provision that limits the risk of providers that choose to take a global payment system, which is much different than the previous payment system under the GAMC program as adopted last year. It's a per member per month. The dollars follow the patient, not a block grant, which was very problematic from our point of view. So that we feel that this bill has some real improvements over what we were dealing with last year.
Very good. Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Franzen.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. And testifier, Representative Kiffmeyer, could you explain why we have to seek federal approval for this?
I have to wait.
I'm terribly sorry. Who would like to address this question? Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Did something happen?
I know, wasn't
paying attention?
Kind of a leprechaun here.
I'm blaming our paid bill.
Didn't want to interfere with any of the St. Patrick's Day festivities.
I'm afraid there was no shenanigans, Representative Kiffmeyer.
I'm absolutely certain of that, Mr. Chairman. In regards to the question, which I've now forgotten. The need for a waiver. Mr. Chairman, Representative Franzen and members, generally, whenever we change what we are doing, we have to go, since this affects federal money, as a general rule, we always have to go and seek a waiver to be able to do so. And so we anticipate that since this is Medicaid money, Minnesota Care is only state money, but because it does include the Medicaid money, that we would have to seek a waiver. And I would say these days, anything that touches health care, we're just generally doing waiver language as we go along to also make sure that, you know, if we don't need it later, we can drop it. But if we do, we make sure we remember that issue.
Representative Franzen? Representative Huntley.
Just to comment on that, Mr. Chair, we already have a waiver from the federal government that allows us to basically do these kinds of things in medical assistance, and so this, I think, would fit in very well with that waiver and that program. That's a program that allows Minnesota to basically combine Medicare and Medicaid and a lot of private insurance into the same kinds of programs, and so that is already there, but I assume we might need another waiver. You never know.
Yes. And
I would also say that the total cost of care model or accountable care organization model is something that Governor Pawlenty's Transformation Task Force in 2008 recommended. We could not get it passed at that time, and I'm glad to see that Representative Kiffmeyer is moving ahead on what was recommended at that time. And I think it's a good, very good step forward. I have a question, however, for Representative Kiffmeyer, or a suggestion, and that relates to the concept of metropolitan statistical areas, which is more complex than most people would realize. For instance, in the Twin Cities here, that actually goes into Wisconsin. In Duluth, it's all of St. Louis County, Carlton County, are part of one, plus the county that is across the river in Wisconsin is all part of one metropolitan statistical area. And in particular, St. Louis County, if there are parts of that county is so big geographically and so different that it might be very difficult for one provider system to say that they're going to treat everybody in that area. So you might look at that, try to figure that out, and make sure that does not become a problem.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley. We wrestled with this language, too, as to how we went sometimes in a, like a statewide, and then you had pushback from other small entities and the concerns addressed there. And so when we came to this, but Representative Huntley, if you can think of better language for this, or if anybody else, and certainly with the Minnesota health plans, they've come up with some alternative language also, which you saw in the DE1 amendment. And so they've taken not so much on the metropolitan statistical area, but to kind of try and make sure that we have it broadly enough to make sure that people aren't in a mandate situation, but also to make sure they can opt in. That possibly might be helpful. I don't know if you've had a chance to read that at all yet or have any thoughts in that regard, but we'll continue working on it.
Right. Very good. I understand there's a couple other testifiers. I'd like to call down Ms. Twyla Brays. Welcome back, Ms. Brays.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You might say that we happened upon this bill, or I happened upon this bill as I came in today, and I chose to testify because I think there might be something more here than meets the eye, even perhaps meets the eye of Representative Kiffmeyer. And I happened to notice on line 1.14 that it said accountable, and Representative Huntley actually mentioned the accountable care organizations. And under Obamacare, you have to have accountable care organizations, or the accountable care organizations can begin on January 1st, 2012. And so I started looking through the bill, and so on line 1.14, it says accountable, and on line 2.3, it says reformed healthcare delivery system. 2.4, it says January 1st, 2012, or upon federal approval. Then it talks about the total cost of care on 219. And then the thing that ACOs, accountable care organizations, are all about, which is gain sharing. And gain sharing is mentioned on line 4.16 and on line 4.35. And so I feel like although this bill never mentions the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, what we have here is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, the ACO provision of it. And I looked up and got this quote from the health policy editor of American Health and Drugs, and it says that Medicare may give preference to ACOs that are participating in similar arrangements with Medicaid, private payers, and other third parties. And so given what Representative Huntley said about the fact that we have a waiver already in the state for Medicare and Medicaid to work together, I feel like this is really about implementing the Obamacare accountable care organizations.
on the Obamacare timeline, and it doesn't say it, but that's what I feel it is, and I wanted to bring the committee's awareness to that fact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Breeze. Representative Kiffmeyer, any comment?
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Breeze, I certainly value your opinion and your knowledge about this. I think what the one thing I want to be careful about, though, is because there's a good idea or a way that, like we did the CCDS last year, and that wasn't Accountable Care Act kind of actions, but you maybe could have described it as such technically because it was, you know, there are some of these elements there. So I want to be careful that there may be possibly some good ideas if we see this going forward. And again, this is getting this out into in the transparency, bringing it open, bringing it forward, and having lots and lots of conversations about it. And if there's any pieces that are good or any portions of that, it would be laid over for possible inclusion. And so this bill in its way as currently written is not a final language by any means. But it may have some good ideas, and just because they happen to appear somewhere else doesn't necessarily mean that was necessarily their intention, nor that we may need to consider options of what we want to do as we go forward.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. We also have another testifier, Ms. Sue Aberholden from NAMI. NAMI. Excuse me. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Aberholden, Executive Director of NAMI. An easy way to remember it, it was obviously mothers who started the organization, so it's NAMI mommies.
Very good.
And Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm sorry, I just saw the bill this morning because I was here late last night, so didn't have a chance to talk to you ahead of time. Just three issues that I would like to raise. One is, on page 2, you reference mental health services, mental health care, but I don't really know what that means. I don't know if that includes the model mental health benefit set, which I know you're probably all tired of hearing that, but it includes assertive community treatment teams, adult rehab mental health services, children's therapeutic services and supports, intensive residential treatment services, and crisis services. And if you remember from the charts, those are services that have been proven to reduce hospitalizations. So I don't know if the model mental health benefit set is included under that definition of mental health care. I think it's also important to remember that the CCDSs didn't actually provide those services. They didn't enter into collaborative agreements with mental health providers. They don't know how to do these services. You know, they're not used to doing them, you know, putting those teams together. So that would be a concern of mine. The second question is about choice. Can people choose not to enroll in the metro area? I think that's important because while some of you on the policy committee, we didn't get to that particular presentation, but part of the 2007 mental health initiative was what we call the PIN projects, preferred integrated networks, where we have the county and the health plan coming together to try to provide services to people with serious mental illnesses in Dakota County. And they were really trying to integrate both mental health and health care. And I wouldn't want them to stop being a part of that important pilot project. So just wondering how that works in. And the third is really the provider network. Again, we didn't find it very useful in terms of, I mean, it was helpful that people could get, you know, medication and hospital care, but they weren't able to get those extra services. So who's in that provider network? Does it include mental health agencies and providers who are also looking at, you know, being able to provide the health care and not just the mental health care piece? So just some questions as I read the bill, you know, this afternoon, that I think you need to think about and be able to answer. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Representative Kiffmeyer for bringing this forward. And I think there's a lot to think about and a lot to consider. In response to Ms. Bray's, who I think is probably still in the room, there are ideas in here that I think would be ideas that we would find in the Affordable Care Act. And there are ideas in here that we would find in Governor Pawlenty's Transformation Task Force report. And there are ideas that are being implemented in other parts of the country. So whether they're in the ACA or not, I hope we don't reject them for just that reason, because I think as we wrestle with the idea of the way we change delivery, then we have to change payment, and I think there may be ideas in here that we should contemplate. I do have a couple of questions, and I've been through the bill one time, and I understand this is probably a work in progress, but in the MSA, in the Metropolitan Statistical Area, I think as I read it, the enrollees, the people that live in those areas have to enroll in an enrolled provider group. Is that, or an enrolled provider network?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy. I believe that if you are in one of those areas and consisting of more than one county and so on and so forth, then you could. But I believe that, again, I wish I would have, I have to tell you that Mary Krinke is not able to be here this week, and she and I have had many discussions about some of these areas, but I would have to say that this may need either more work or more defining, and I'm just wanting to be concerned that I don't make a statement here. But the intention, it's almost a little bit easier to say, the intention was to create flexibility and options, so not necessarily.
And I think if I read it correctly, Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, and I'm not trying to, I'm trying to understand the intention. So I think as I read it, if you live in an MSA, you can choose to enroll if you're in Minnesota Care or in certain categories of medical assistance, you can enroll in. You can choose to, but if you choose not to, I don't know that there's another option.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy. That is a discussion, and by the way, in that DE amendment, there is some language in there that is a second iteration of fleshing out that language. So if you read that, that might help to, we've tried to adjust to that, but for ease of consideration, we decided to just stick with the original bill. And then make that amendment available so you could see some ongoing language, but it is not language that I'm ready at this time to just substitute, because we have not all gone through it sufficiently enough. But that issue was on our discussion, and there is some attempt to address that in that that amendment language. That may be of help to you, and be glad to have your assistance as we go forward and maybe consider others as well.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative
Kiffmeyer, the committee probably doesn't know that I've had the good fortune to talk with Representative Kiffmeyer conceptually about this on a couple of occasions. I've had a little more time to think about it, but we're just seeing the language for the first time, and the first time to see the DE. So I'll keep looking at that. Can I just ask you one more question, please? Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, now looking at it from the provider perspective, there's been a lot of integration in Minnesota of our healthcare delivery system, so hospitals and providers, and especially in areas where there's population, and then in parts of rural Minnesota, not as much integration. And then we also see consolidation, right? So different than integration, but consolidation of the market. And there are providers sprinkled throughout the state of Minnesota who don't, you know, they resist that integration, and they're worried about the consolidation. So I'm just wondering, in the MSAs, what happens with the providers? If we don't have the networks that are created essentially through the health plans, then will the providers themselves create networks, or are they going to be sort of, you know, independent on their own? Have you thought that part through, or have you thought through the intention of that part yet?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Murphy. Yes, we've had some discussions about that. As a matter of fact, that's why we went to the Metropolitan Statistical Area. There was an iteration before this, and we felt that it was too comprehensive a little bit and maybe too mandating. And so that's why we decided to show in this particular case, because we want to be sure that the county-based purchasing plans and other smaller providers, some have an alliance, a loose network, you might say. Others are actually integrated. I mean, there's whole varieties out there. And that was kind of the challenge in a way, just to allow that flexibility. Again, in the DE amendment language, there is another effort at going through and displaying kind of that effort to try and give even more flexibility. And that was through input from the health plans. but it hasn't been vetted or gone through a big enough discussion to take it in as an actual amendment. But yes, thought has been given to that, and some of that language you might see beyond 1143 as you have here in the bill today, you may see in that amendment.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I appreciate the work that goes into trying to put into policy these ideas. So it sounds like how the providers might connect together is a work in progress and not yet clear. Is that safe to say?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
Representative?
Representative Murphy, yes. That indeed is the case, that we are continuing ongoing work, and probably things expand a little bit as you start from one smaller group and then just kind of gets bigger and bigger. But yes, definitely, we will continue, and you're welcome to weigh in on that as well.
Thank you. And I guess I'll leave it at that for now. I think there are ideas in here that we've been pursuing since about 2008, and it's good to know that there is life connected to these ideas yet. And I'm glad to see that we won't necessarily be pursuing the idea that the block grant CCDS, because I think that was very problematic for both providers and enrollees. And glad to see instead that we were thinking about a more comprehensive payment model. So I will be watching and piping up with my thoughts. Thank you.
Very good. I understand we have another testifier, Ms. Catherine Commit from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Ms. Commit. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Catherine Commit. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. And first of all, I want to thank Representative Kiffmeyer. She contacted us and shared with us a copy of her draft legislation, and we had a chance to review it and did make some comments. I do have a copy of a letter that I would like to distribute to the committee members, and this is on the language from the bill before you. Representative Kiffmeyer met with us again on Tuesday morning, and we did talk to her about some ideas, and which evidently are part of that amendment language. And I haven't actually seen the DE amendment yet, so I will get a copy of that and look at it. And I do want to acknowledge with Representative Kiffmeyer that she has encouraged us to work together with her, which we plan to do, and she has been very open to our ideas. So I just want to make a few comments about this legislation and start off by saying, first and foremost, that over 20 years ago, the state had a tremendous problem with their Medicaid program, particularly with enrollees being denied access to care. And this was because there were some providers who would simply not see Medicaid recipients. As a result, the state, both the legislature and the administration, decided to turn to the private market and require health insurers to fix the problem. And as a result, we did. And for over 20 years, we have provided access to care, improved quality of care, and offered financial predictability and stability to our state's Medicaid program. So we think that this bill makes some big changes to that system and would caution that it would be premature to end this partnership wholesale until the state can assure a similar level of access, quality, and cost containment. In response to Representative Murphy's comments around the CCDS hospitals, there were lessons that were learned, and I think it was in many ways a successful experiment. There were things that people learned that were both good as well as bad, and those things need to be considered before we move forward in adopting a more comprehensive program to pay providers directly. We agree that providers can innovate when given the flexibility and motivation to do so. What we are concerned about the legislation, and I think we've shared this with Representative Kiffmeyer, is that the bill does not provide any real incentive for providers to participate. And as we saw with the CCDS experiment, only those providers who faced tremendous financial loss were willing to participate in the new program. Most hospitals across the state chose to accept losses and treat the uninsured rather than risk participation in the program. And this also gets back to the question that Representative Gottwald asked around how is risk going to be managed. So that is one of our concerns, and also to Representative Murphy's question about what happens outside the MSAs. And actually, I only have one copy, but I'm happy to pass this around to show people. These are the documents from the DHS website that show where what choices people have, both for, let's see, this is PMAP, and this is for Minnesota Care, the health plan choices, which includes both private health plans as well as county-based purchasing organizations. And then what I don't have a very good copy of, this is from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. If you can see here, the metropolitan statistical areas. And so you see that there are only 8 metropolitan statistical areas that are in Minnesota. And so it is a question. We also have the question about, well, what happens to those counties that aren't part of an MSA? And one of our concerns is that under the terms of this bill, it could be easy for some providers to just decide not to participate. And as originally introduced, the bill would return to a fee-for-service model. And we think that would be problematic in terms of assuring access to covered services. So in order to make this idea work, we think it's really paramount to make sure that whatever system is developed, that it creates true accountability for the care of the population. That has to be linked. I guess I'll just make a few other brief comments. That, again, around fee-for-service. Fee-for-service provides no care coordination. And we just think that, and I think Representative Kiffmeyer has entertained this idea, to continue to use managed care as the default system, which would be easier to implement and continue to provide access to care for enrollees. There was some very problematic language that we had regarding retaliation that I believe Representative Kiffmeyer has taken out, so we appreciate that very much. And with that, I will end my comments.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Kmit. Any questions from committee members? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had one more thought for the committee as we think about this. And Ms. Kmit triggered it when she talked about the goal is the care of the population. I think one of the things we learned, one of the big lessons I learned working on GAMC was that for a long time, I think we believed that the best way to make sure there wasn't stigma attached to being in a public program was to make sure everybody went through the same door. So everybody in a public program, GAMC, Minnesota Care, Medicaid, in PMAP, get an insurance card. They get to choose just like everybody else. But some of the populations served in some of our public programs don't navigate those systems in the same way. So when we think about GAMC and that population now in Medicaid, we're hoping, and I believe the systems are already moving in that direction of ensuring that there are still intensive care coordination attached to those people based on the lessons that we learned last summer. But for some of the population in Minnesota Care or Medicaid, they're not going to need that much support. So when we think about care coordination, I think we have to think about it as a tool to help those with the most disease burden, just like I saw in Representative Abler's amendments yesterday, thinking about medication therapy management and tying it to disease burden or number of chronic conditions. It should be a tool used strategically, not necessarily applied everywhere, because if applied everywhere, then I think we'll be wasting scarce dollars. So I just want to put that on the table as well. Thanks.
Representative Abler.
Well, thanks. And just briefly, Mr. Chair, you do look good in green. And mm-hmm. Where would you rather be on St. Patrick's Day but running a meeting?
In St. Paul, for sure.
Good answer. Ms. Kmit, I was just in district. This would require that we don't have HMOs anymore, right? Is that, you have to discontinue, at least for Minnesota subsidized products? Is that the heart of the bill, and everything would change from that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Abler, in my initial reading of the bill, it seems that there is a role for health plans, the way the bill has been drafted, to participate as major medical care carrier. But we still have a lot of questions, and we're still trying to understand that. And I know Representative Kiffmeyer is still working on putting all the pieces together.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Very good. Any other questions? If not, Representative Kiffmeyer renews her motion that House File 1143 be laid over for... Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kiffmeyer, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do, and I appreciate the opportunity. I think you will see members that in the though the DE amendment is not ready for being moved or being processed along that way, that certainly it is a situation in which I received this letter, and in working with the Council of Health Plans, the DE1 amendment is actually their language and their proposal. So they've been weighing in substantially and have given a lot of contribution already. And one of the things that we found as you flesh out an idea, and I appreciate Representative Murphy recognizing that it takes a fair amount of work to do that, and we happen to hit the heavy time in the revisor's office, so we wish we could have gotten out the final language sooner, but you know, they are humans and we can only have so many expectations of them. So we did try to get it out as much as we could in the circles that we knew about to be able to give it as much exposure as we could, but it certainly wasn't there. I want to express also that, Ms. Braze, I welcome you as well to give input to this language and to contribute to the process and work with me as well as the plans and anybody else that has an interest in this. This is a work in progress, and I appreciate the fact that Chairman Abler was very kind as to giving the opportunity, because we all know that when we actually hold a bill for a public hearing, it gives you that visible opportunity to have those discussions that are really, really important and very valuable, no matter how much you do as well. Thank you very much, members, for your consideration. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would renew my motion that this bill would be laid over for possible inclusion and for ongoing work. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, Representative Huntley?
Well, just a comment. The total cost of care thing maximizes the flexibility that a delivery system can do to take care of their own patients, and it allows them to figure out the best way. It doesn't say that we're going to sit here in St. Paul and tell them how to treat every single patient that has every different kind of disease. It gives them the flexibility to figure out the best way to take care of these people. And the Minnesota Care people, they're working people just like you and I. They're very similar. If you go to the CCDS population, they're completely different than you or I. They cannot work because they're so sick. And what was quite clear with the CCDSs is that for that kind of population, you cannot separate the social services from the healthcare system. And the healthcare system in those four CCDSs figured out that they had to work with the social service system in order to save money and improve these people's health. I don't think that's something that we could sit here in St. Paul and write and tell them they should do. They have to look at their individual patients and figure out the best way to help them. And the total cost of care gives them the maximum flexibility to do that.
Very good. Okay, I also have to move that House File 248 be recommended to pass. Oh, do we? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, anyway, on your agenda, the next two bills are not actually going to be heard today, so at this point we need to, because they have no fiscal impact. So we're moving them straight to the House floor. Thank you, Holly. And at this time, I'd like to make a motion to move House File 248 to be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. I also would like to move House File 928 to be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I would just like to say to all those who were... Oh, Representative Anderson had a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. Would like to make a little announcement. My son, who's at college at NDSU, is here visiting me today on his spring break. So he's here with us today. And I also have a friend from my district also here visiting me today, Peter Beckel.
Well, Representative Anderson, would you like to point out your son so we can say hello?
He's in the NDSU T-shirt.
Oh, the North Dakota State University.
He looks like his father, so...
Well, welcome. It's nice for you to be here on your spring break instead of the parade downtown. Shows responsibility. So, if there's no further business, all to those of you who are wearing green, you're looking mighty grand. Happy St. Patrick's Day. This meeting is adjourned.